Okay, let's go to Genesis 42. No, we got to do 41, don't we? Yeah, we got to do 41. Yeah. I'm looking at 41 and I said 42. Okay. So page 52, toward the top, it says, in spite of the fact that Joseph remained in prison, the dreams he interpreted happened just as he said. Thus he is encouraged that his interpretation of his own dreams was right too. So chapter 41, H is the exaltation of Joseph. And so one is the occasion. What's the occasion of his exaltation? Pharaoh has two dreams, right? He has two dreams. They're very similar, right? The first one has the cows. The other one has the sheaves. So notice in verse, so he has this dream about the seven cows and the 7 ears. Verse 8 says, now in the morning his spirit was troubled, so he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt. So notice they have a bunch of them. And all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them to the dream. And now this is 2 years after Joseph interpreted the chief cupbearer's dream. So verse 9, then the light comes on. Then the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh saying, I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. And he relates the thing about that. Dreams. Verse 12 says, now a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we related them to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream, and just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me in my office, but he hanged him. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, but no one to interpret it. And I have heard it said about you that when you bear a dream, you can hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph then answered Pharaoh saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph and he tells him the dreams. Okay. I'm not going to read all those things about the seven cows and the 7 ears. Verse 25 says, now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, 7 good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one and the same. The 7 lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the 7 thin ears scorched by the east wind will be 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt, and after them 7 years of famine will come, and all the abundance will be forgotten in the land, and the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of that subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now as for the repeating, and that's the one I read earlier, the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means the matter is determined by God and God will quickly bring it about. Now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise, and let him set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land. And let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. Let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain for the food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority and let them guard it. Let the food become as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine which will occur in the land of Egypt so that the land will not perish during the famine. Now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit? So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people should do homage. Only in the throne I will be greater than you. Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand, put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put the gold necklace around his neck. He had him ride in his second chariot, and they proclaimed before him, bow the knee. So now all these people in Egypt are bowing the knee to Joseph. And he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh named Joseph Zephanath-Paneas, or another place where the king exercises his authority and changes the name to an Egyptian name. And he gave him Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, as his wife. And Joseph went forth over the land of Egypt. Now Joseph was 30 years old. So how many years have passed since we first read about Joseph? 13 years, right? He was 17 when we first read about him. So he's been through an awful lot in 13 years. Now Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. During the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly. So he gathered all the food of these 7 years, which occurred in the land of Egypt, and placed the food in the cities. He placed in every city the food from its own surrounding fields. Thus Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he stopped measuring it, for it was beyond measure. Now before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, bore to him. Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, God has made me forget all my trouble and my father's household. So Manasseh means making to forget, as you might expect. The second he named Ephraim, which means fruitfulness, for he said, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. When the 7 years of plenty which had been in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said, then there was famine in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried out to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph, whatever he says to you, you shall do. When the famine was spread over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine was severe in the land of Egypt, the people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the earth. So, H, the exaltation of Joseph. One is the occasion for Joseph's exaltation. 2 years later, Pharaoh has dreams which no one can interpret. B, the chief cupbearer remembers Joseph. 2, Joseph interprets Pharaoh's dreams, giving the credit to God. 3, Joseph is made a ruler in Egypt. 4, Joseph is faithful in much. In spite of his success and status, Joseph did not forsake his heritage. He gave his sons Hebrew names. The name Manasseh describes God's activity on behalf of Joseph, explaining in general the significance of his change of fortune. The name is a PL participle. That doesn't mean anything to you, but it's a form of a verb, suggesting the meaning, he who brings about forgetfulness. The verb, neshani, may have been used instead of the normal nishani, to provide a closer sound play on the name Manasseh. The giving of this Hebrew name to his son shows that Joseph retained his heritage and faith, and it shows that a brighter future was in store for him. Be the name Ephraim, a form of the Hebrew verb parah, means to bear fruit. There's no doubt that the name became attached to the land in which the tribe settled, and it is possible that there is the dual ending. The dual ending came from, but in this story, it refers to Joseph's God-given fruitfulness. So, in Hebrew, you have singular forms, you have plural forms, and you have a double form, and that's what he's referring to by the name Ephraim, a dual ending. Questions or comments at this point? Okay, chapter 42. Joseph's dreams remembered and the testing of his brothers. Number one is the occasion for the remembrance of the dreams. 1-5. Now Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, and Jacob said to his sons, "Why are you staring at one another?" He said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us from that place, so that we may live and not die." Then the ten brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain from Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, "I am afraid that harm may befall him." So the sons of Israel came to buy grain among those who were coming for the famine in the land of Canaan. There was famine in the land of Canaan also. So that's the occasion. Two, the dreams are remembered when the brothers bow down. Verses 6-8. Now Joseph was the ruler over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came to him and bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. When Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. He dressed like an Egyptian and he walked like an Egyptian. Okay? So he was the one who, Joseph's brothers came, they bowed down to him. He recognized them, but he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. And he said to them, "Where have you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." But Joseph had recognized his brothers, although they did not recognize him. Joseph remembered the dreams which he had had about them and said to them, "You are spies. You have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." Then they said to him, "No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men." Your servants are not spies. Yet he said to them, "No, but you have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." But they said, "Your servants," so they just keep giving you more information is what happens. "Your servants are 12 brothers in all, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no longer alive." Joseph said to them, "It is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you will be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you that he may go get your brother while you remain confined, that your words may be tested." Whether there is truth in you, but if not, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies. So he put them all together in prison for 3 days. Now Joseph said to them on the third day, "Do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison. But as for the rest of you, go, carry grain for the famine of your households, and bring your youngest brothers to me, so your words may be verified, and you will not die." And they did so. Then they said to one another, "Truly we are guilty." Notice now they start, all of this is to test them. And now they're starting to come under conviction, right? "Truly we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore, this distress has come upon us." So they think they're reaping what they sowed. Reuben answered them, saying, "Did I not tell you? Do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen. Now comes the reckoning for his blood." They did not know, however, that Joseph understood, for there was an interpreter between them. So he really plays this thing out. He turned away from them and wept. But when he returned to them and spoke to them, he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. So he's really playing this thing out. Then Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to restore every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. And thus it was done for them. So they loaded their donkeys with the grain and departed from there. As one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money, and behold, it was in the mouth of his sack. Then he said to his brothers, "My money has been returned, and behold, it is even in my sack." And their hearts sank, and they turned, trembling to one another, saying, "What is this that God has done to us?" Okay, so they're really freaking out now. Okay. Let's fill in a few more blanks. So three is the brothers are tested by being accused of being spies. Four, the effect of the test on the brothers is conviction of their past sins. The interesting thing is that they, knowing their past sins, are eager to comply because they see God's retributive hand in it. But Jacob, not knowing the past and grieved because he thought another son was dead, refused to let Benjamin go on their return to Egypt. So that's what's brought out in the rest of the chapter. Look at verse 36. It says, "Their father Jacob said to them, 'You have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more and Simeon is no more. And you would take Benjamin? All these things are against me.' Then Reuben spoke to his father saying, 'You may put my two sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my care, and I will return him to you.' But Jacob said, 'My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left. If harm should befall him on the journey you are taking, then you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol.'" So at this point, he's unwilling to let him go. So then we come to J, the return of Joseph's brothers to Egypt and their second test. So 1 through 15 is the return to Egypt for more food. So he won't, at first he keeps saying no, and they say, "Well, we have to, Dad. We have to go or we're all going to starve." Verse 6 says, "Then Israel said, 'Why did you treat me so badly by telling the man whether you still had another brother?' But they said, 'The man questioned particularly about us and our relatives, saying, "Is your father still alive? Have you another brother?" So we answered his questions. Could we possibly know that he would say, 'Bring your brother down?' Judah said to his father Israel, 'Send the lad with me, and we will arise and go.'" So Judah starts portraying himself as kind of like a leader, okay? "That we may live and not die, we as well as you and our little ones. I myself will be surety for him. You may hold me responsible." A little bit better than Reuben says, "If I don't bring him back, you can kill my boys." Okay. Yes?
How old is Benjamin at this time?
How old is who?
Benjamin.
Is he what?
Doesn't he have sons listed later on? We're talking about the 70 people who go to Egypt. Why are they calling him a lad if he has kids?
He's not that. He was born before Joseph ends up here, right?
Yeah.
So he's got to be at least what? 20. At least 13. Okay. But I don't know for sure how old he is. What?
They called Joseph at 17 a lad.
Yeah. He's probably in his teens anyway. Okay. So Judah said to his father Israel, "Send the lad with me. We will rise and go that we may live and not die, we as well as you and our little ones. I myself will be surety for him. You may hold me responsible. if I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame before you forever. For if we had not delayed, surely by now we could have returned twice. So quite a bit of time has passed. Then their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best products of the land in your bags. Carry them down to the man as a present, a little balm and a little honey, aromatic gum and myrrh, pistachio nuts and almonds. Take double the money in your hand and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was a mistake. Take your brother also and arise, return to the man. And may God Almighty grant you compassion in the sight of the man, so that he will release you, or release to you your other brother and Benjamin. As for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. So the men took this present, and they took double the money in their hand, and Benjamin, and they arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. Let me see where I'm at here. Blank on it. Okay. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to his house steward, bring the men into the house and slay an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon. So the man did as Joseph said and brought the men to Joseph's house. Now the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said, it is because of the money that was returned in our sacks the first time that we are being brought in, that they may seek occasion against us and fall upon us and take us for slaves with our donkeys. So these guys, they really have a super negative perspective of everything. But Joseph, he's kind of encouraged that because he's testing them. So they came near to Joseph's house steward and spoke to him at the entrance of the house and said, oh my Lord, we indeed came down the first time to buy food, and it came about when we came to the lodging place that we opened our sacks, and behold, so they tell them all that story. Verse 22, we have also brought down other money in our hand to buy food. We do not know who put our money in our sacks. He said, be at ease, do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money. Then he brought Simeon out to them. Then the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet, and he gave them donkey's fodder. So they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon, for they had heard that they were to eat a meal there. When Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present which was in their hand, and bowed to the ground before him. Then he asked them about their welfare and said, is your old father well, of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? They said, you're serving our father as well, and he is still alive. They bowed down in homage, so there they are bowing down again. As he lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, he said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? And he said, may God be gracious to my son. Joseph hurried out, for he was deeply stirred over his brother, and he sought a place to weep, and he entered his chamber and wept there. Then he washed his face and came out. He controlled himself and said, serve the Lord. So they served him by himself and then by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat bread with the Hebrews, for that is loathsome to the Egyptians. Now they were seated before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. The men looked at one another in astonishment. He took portions to them from his own table, but Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. So they feasted and drank freely with him. What do you think he's doing here?
Giving them a clue?
No, he's not giving them a clue. He's testing them with their attitude. He's testing their attitude about their youngest, about his brother, Benjamin. Right? To see if they hold any animosity towards him. Ezra?
Especially when Rachel died before Joseph left, and Rachel had to have had Benjamin before he left.
Right.
So it was at least 20 years, if not older.
Well, whatever. That, to me, that's not all that important how old he is. Anyway, he's old enough to have kids, evidently, if he has two by the time they come down to Egypt. And we don't know how much time has passed between all of this stuff, right? I mean, it doesn't tell us how long they stayed down there when they went back the first time, right? What does he say? We could have gone back and forth twice already had you let us go, right? So time has passed. So the time factor doesn't seem that big to me. Okay, so Jay. The return of Joseph's brothers to Egypt and their second test. So they return to Egypt for more food. B is the meeting and meal with Joseph. The mysterious accuracy of the seating order would have its part to play in Joseph's plan by increasing the brothers' uneasy sense of exposure to divine intervention. Because they're already sensitive about that, right? The special treatment of Benjamin is to test to see if the older brothers hold any animosity towards the younger son of Rachel, Benjamin, like they did her older son, Joseph. On top of page 53, the brothers of Joseph little knew the meaning and the importance of the experiences they were having, but great issues were hanging in the balance. Many of the important tests through which God passes us are found in the very ordinary and mundane events of our lives. It is in the little things of life, in the hidden things, that we reveal what we really are. It is a very humbling thought. So how do you behave when you're away from everybody that knows you? As in comparison with what your behavior is like when you're with people that know you. Okay, chapter 44K is the final test of Joseph's brothers and the intercession of Judah. So underneath that there's a quote from Kidner. It says, Joseph's strategy, already brilliantly successful in creating the situations and tensions he required, now produces its master stroke. So number one is the test involved the placing of Joseph's special cup in Benjamin's sack. Okay. So verse 1 says, then he commanded his house stewards, saying, fill the men's sacks with food as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. Put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his money for the grain, and he did just as Joseph told him. As soon as it was light, the men were sent away, they with their donkeys. They had just gone out of the city and were not far off when Joseph said to his house steward, up, follow the men. And when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from which my Lord drinks and which he intended uses for divination? You have done wrong in doing this. So they overtook them and spoke the words to them. They said to him, why does my Lord speak such words as these? Far be it from your servant to do such a thing. Behold, the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks, we have brought back to you from the land of Canaan. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? With whomever of your servants it is found, let him die. Man, they're always ready to kill somebody. They're always ready. And we will also be my Lord's slaves. So he said, now let it be according to your words. So he agrees with what they say. He with whom it is found shall be my slave, and the rest of you shall be innocent. Then they hurried. Each man lowered his sack to the ground, and each man opened his sack. He searched, beginning with the old. Notice how the drama. He plays it out. He searched, beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes. When each man loaded his donkey, they returned to the city. When Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there, and they fell to the ground before him, so they're bowing down again. Joseph said to them, "What is this deed that you have done? Do you not know that such a man as I can indeed practice divination?" So Judah said, "What can we say to my Lord?" So notice Judah again. He's the one that's stepping up. So Judah said, "What can we say to my Lord? What can we speak? And how can we justify ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Behold, we are many. We are my Lord's slaves, both we and the one in whom whose possession the cup has been found." But he said, "Far be it from me to do this. The man in whose possession the cup has been found, he shall be my slave. But as for you, go up in peace to your father." Then Judah approached him and said, "Oh, my Lord, may your servant please speak a word in my Lord's ears, and do not be angry with your servant, for you are equal to Pharaoh." Notice that statement. "My Lord asked his servant, saying, 'Have you a father or a brother?'" And so he tells him all the, recounts all the story. Drop down to verse 30. "Now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life, when he sees that the lad is not with us, he will die. Thus your servants will bring the gray hair of your servant, our father, down to Sheol in sorrow. For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, 'If I do not bring him back to you, then let me bear the blame before my father forever. Now therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad, a slave to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me? For I fear that I see the evil that would overtake my father.'" So now Judah offers himself in Benjamin's place. So the intercession of Judah. What's the last blank I gave you?
Special cup.
Special cup. Okay. So underneath that it says, "The wheel had made full turn, and they who once sold a brother were now willing to be sold into slavery rather than give up another brother." Joseph tries them to the uttermost to give the deepest feelings of heart an opportunity to display. All the conditions were present for another betrayal. The lad had been quietly favored over them and now was to be found guilty of the theft. The brothers could so easily walk away from it and be rid of another brother. Yet this time their response shows how well the chastening had done its work. This is shown in the intercession of Judah. Judah's words are remarkable when you consider that he was the ringleader in selling Joseph into slavery and had little concern over the impact of the news of Joseph's alleged death would have on his father. Now he is willing to take his brother's place as a slave because of his concern for his father. And so the letter L, the reconciliation of Joseph and his brothers, chapter 45, 1 through 15. "Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried, 'Have everyone go out from me.' For there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. He wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard of it. And Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?' But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'Please come closer to me.' And they came closer, and he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me here before you to preserve life.'" For this guy's got such a fantastic theological perspective of this thing. "For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years. in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now therefore it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me and do not delay. You shall live in the land of Goshen, the best place to have livestock. And you shall bear me, you and your children, or be near me, you and your children, and your children's children, and your flocks, and your herds, and all that you have. There I will also provide for you, for there are still 5 years of famine to come, and you and your household and all that you have would be impoverished. Behold, your eyes see in the eyes of my brother Benjamin, see that it is my mouth which is speaking to you. Now you must tell my father all of all my splendor in Egypt and all that you've seen, and you must hurry and bring my father down here. Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. He kissed all his brothers and wept on them. Afterward, his brothers talked with him. So underneath Al says there would be no retaliation from Joseph because he had the correct theological view of the entire episode. The certainty, Kidner wrote, the certainty that God's will, not man's, was controlling reality in every event, shines out as Joseph's guiding light in the secret of his astounding lack of rancor. It was applied theology, God truth, releasing the will for constructive effort and the emotions for healing affection. Ross wrote, forgiving reconciliation can only be accomplished through spiritual discernment. When the party that has been wrong can see things as God sees them and communicate that as the basis for compassion and forgiveness, then reconciliation can take place. No individual who believes in the sovereignty of God has the right to hold grudges or to retaliate. He must see that God had some purpose in it. Look at Romans 12. Verse 17 says, never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is in right in the, what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. So we as believers should never refuse to be reconciled. If someone wants to reconcile with us, we should reconcile. As far as it depends on us, we're to be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge. Beloved, leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will reap or heap burning coals on his head, which means maybe that person would come under conviction. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Last verse, Ephesians 4:32. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other. What's the standard? Just as God in Christ also has forgiven you. Any questions or comments before we stop? Okay, on Friday, we'll finish and review for the exam.